Hello, and welcome to Doing Social Research, where I talk with some of my favorite people who do social research to dig into the cool projects they're working on, along with their struggles and successes that they've had in their careers. My goal is to help demystify research for students, help other researchers hear stories of their colleagues' wins and losses, and provide a platform for all the brilliant work of folks doing research in the humanities and social sciences. I'm your host, Phyllis Rippey, a professor of sociology at the University of Ottawa and creator of the website doingsocialresearch.com. I've been teaching research methods for over 15 years and have carried out my own sociological research using both qualitative methods and advanced statistics. But today, we're not here to talk about me. We're here to talk with Chloe Kim about finding meaning as resistance to power and how research can be an extension of oneself. As she says, all good research must come from the heart with compassion. Chloe currently works as a harm reduction worker with the amazing new Anchor program in Ottawa and is also a transgender rights activist serving as the board president of Kindspace, a 2S LGBTQ plus community drop-in organization providing, well, a kind space. She's also had a number of research assistantships, including working at Briere Research Institute, where she investigated quality of life of residents and long-term care and strategies to ensure equity for transgender older adults. After completing a BA in communications from Hankuk University of Foreign Studies in South Korea, Chloe just recently graduated with a Master's of Arts in Sociology with a specialization in feminist and gender studies at the University of Ottawa, where she was supervised by yours truly, moi, and where she also had the most badass thesis defense I think I've ever witnessed in my life. And she was nominated for a university award for her master's thesis titled, Am I Trans Enough? A Hermeneutical Phenomenological Investigation into Trans Identities. Welcome.
Thank you for having me, Phyllis.
I'm so excited to talk with you and to have you here. And I just think you're amazing. Oh. And I've always loved your research, and it was such a pleasure getting to work with you on your project. But I wonder if we could start with you just sort of explaining what the hell that title means. Like, I get the first part, am I trans enough? And obviously I get it because I was your supervisor. But for those who don't know what a hermeneutical phenomenological investigation means, could you just, like, what is that?
So basically, hermeneutical phenomenology, like, as much as it sounds like scary, it's basically going to the people themselves and listening to their story and trying to find what they think about their own, like, experiences, how they find meaning from their experiences. So instead of, like, having, like, you know, hypotheses, like, and theories and everything like that, it's just going to the participant themselves, hearing their stories, and capturing that stories, essentially. So basically what I did with the research is that I went to the trans people in Ottawa and listened to their stories about how they found out about their identity, how they think about their identity, and also how they explore their identity. And I kind of, like, you know, mushed it together, kind of, like, you know, try to extract. I guess, I don't know if the extract would be the right word.
No, that's what I learned from the committee member who's a phenomenologist, is we're not extracting, but we're, I still don't know, what do we say? We're like trying to make sense of, trying to understand the experiences from the in sense of self. Right?
Exactly.
Like,
exactly.
From within.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, like you said, like, trying to understand the meaning of those experiences, and also, you know, for ourselves too, what does the meaning means to us?
Yeah. As a researcher.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So what did you find? What was it that, how did people make meaning of their search for their gender identity?
So, like, the basic, like, the research question I had was that, like, it comes from my own, like, personal experiences, right? Like, I am a trans woman, but, like, to realize that it took a lot of steps and journey to get there. And certain times, I'm still not sure if am I, like, woman enough? Am I trans enough? Like, you know, as per the title.
Yeah.
So there is this, like, always this uncertainty, right? And also when I was in like, you know, university, like doing like feminist, you know, like classes and stuff, like one of the like the ongoing thing was that, oh, like gender is a social construction. It's like, you know, performative thing, quoting like Judith Butler. So yeah, let's say like all these things are true, then if like gender is truly like socially constructed and performative, then how do I know that I am a woman, right? Yeah. It's kind of like an eternal struggle. And also, Phyllis, like you kind of like asked that question to me. I think that's why I got into the question in the first place. So thank
Fair
you.
Enough. Yeah.
So, but yeah. So I kind of like started like thinking about it, like introspection, and also went to the participant and asked during my research. And the core theme was that knowing isn't not something that we suddenly like realize at the moment, mm-hmm. but it's more of a continuous journey, right? It's something we do continuously, finding joy out of it, kind of building a Lego set, like picking out different Legos, building it stuff. If you don't like it, you know, taking something out. It's kind of the whole process.
One of the things that I loved about our discussions when we were in our like grad student meetings or one-on-one or whenever talking about your project is this sort of this discovery that like working with you helped me to have as well, just about thinking about our like any kind of identity, and that it's so, I don't know if funny is the right word, but it's like there's this idea with gender that we're supposed to have this like static understanding. It's like you're born, you're assigned this gender, and then either you stick with it or like one day you're like, oh, damn, that's not me. Whereas any other kind of identity, like just about any other identity a person could have, it's like we grow with it. You know, it's like I was saying at the time I was like playing the flute, which I haven't picked up in like a year, but I'm still paying for it. But anyway, but it, you know, so it's like I would talk about how it's like, you know, I'm not a professional flautist, but I play the flute. It's like I'm exploring, like I'm just learning how to play. It's like, do I want to keep doing this? Do I want to like join an orchestra? Do I want more of this? Do I want less of this? And it like, it just started to make this kind of like intuitive sense of like, why is it with gender that we have this requirement that like you know, like that this is the one thing. And you know, I think that your work just really showed the like the fluidity of it. And also I will say, like, one of the things, and I gotta like make sure I'm not just talking because that's one of my goals of this podcast is that I shut up and I listen to my guests, but it is this this idea that this isn't, even though the thesis title is Am I Trans Enough? And it's about trans identities, it's not just about trans people. It's about sort of identity, and it's about gender for everybody, that we all have these kinds of shifting gender identities, that mm-hmm. it's not like none of us feel completely like, you know, like I have moments where I'm like, I am so butch. And I have moments where I'm like, you know, I'm like, today I'm all dressed up and I'm all got my makeup on. And so it's like, why wouldn't a trans person get to have that same kind of like, and also that you talk about joy, like why not also get that joy of like having days where you're like, I want to be butch and I want to like, you know, well, I was going to say punch someone in the face, but we shouldn't. But you know what I mean? Like, that I'm tough, that it's like, no one can fuck with me. And then there's days where it's like, I want to be a pretty princess, you know? Like, does that, am I making any sense?
Oh, yeah, of course. Like, this research definitely, like you said, it's mostly like focused on, like, trans people. But it leaves a room for, like, you know, kind of like expansion, right? Like, looking into other identities and just, like, generally self. I use an example of like, you know, my identity as a gamer girl in the research. But, you know, for like that example, like I like video games, but I didn't born knowing that, you know, I like video games. I first had to like try like different video games, like try like, you know, strategy games, like FPSs, like maybe like story-based games. And slowly I picked up, oh, I like this. Oh, I don't like that. And through that, I was able to like build up, you know, my own like unique identity. And just like that, like gender doesn't have to be just strictly locked into this one box, it can be also like so much different things, so much possibilities. And like you said, the element of joy is really important, right? Why not have fun finding your own unique gender identity like you do with your flute playing, like I do with my games, my other people do, like finding joy from gardening, planting different plants, like, you know, all that kind of things. So I think this research has been my way to kind of resist the social norm that tried to put people into like different boxes, different kind of like structures. And also for myself too, like through this, like now that I realize that I don't have to be this one specific image of gender, I can truly explore and try out different things. And also outside of my life too, like for my like professional work, I can do like different work to try to see if I like this, if I don't like this, and kind of like pushing myself out of my comfort zone and expanding my horizon of myself.
I love that. And it's so liberating. Like, it is like liberation through joyfulness. And I also would, like, I was just thinking too, that I know in your thesis that part of what you were talking about also, or that you, one of your goals was to get away from the kind of like pathologizing of trans people, but not just as like mentally ill kind of stuff, but also just like, it's so often presented as like depressing. Like, could you speak to that a little bit?
Oh, like, yeah, of course. Like, as a, you know, trans person, and also, like, I know a lot of you, like, the audiences,
yeah.
have noticed that in media, it has been, like, changing a little bit, but when they depict trans person or other, like, queer, like, marginalized identities, they always are depicted as this beings with, like, pain, going through a lot of, like, difficult life situations, like, you know, one like infamous stereotype is that when there's a trans character, like they're going to get killed at the end, which is really, really depressing. And like growing up, watching that all over and over again, like my image of trans people was that, oh, these people are so like always so sick. They're like poor things and something to be taken care of. And as like basically a diseased being, some that have like, they lack agency, they lack autonomy. And it does the same, it does that thing to all trans people. When society depicts certain groups of people as this people who lack agency, they become those kind of people who lack agency. Like in context of Canada, like when a lot of researchers did research on Indigenous communities, they did also the exact same thing too. When I was like doing like, you know, feminist like courses, one of the scholars I was really, really impressed and got influenced was Eve Tuck.
Okay.
And they talk about like, you know, how we need to stop doing that kind of like pain-based research basically and try to focus more on joy. Because instead of focusing on pain, if you focus on joy, that leaves a room for the participants, those marginalized groups, those trans people, to have their voices back. It brings people into a position where they have their own agency, their dreams, their hopes, and just, you know, make them kind of like humanizing them, right?
Yeah.
Just as, you know, all these other people like, you know, around us.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's like trying to suggest that like trans people are happy every second of every day.
Mm-hmm.
But just that it's like all of us, we have like horrible times we go through and we have times that are great.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's like, we get to be whole human beings with like the complexity of emotions that everybody has.
Exactly. It, like focusing on joy doesn't mean that we are going to like deny the pain. Like the pain works a really, really important role in our lives, right? It exposes, like, you know, in terms of power, like power differences, the damage that has been inflicted by those in power, structural inequalities and stuff. But focusing on pain could be useful in exposing those gaps, like, again, like just focusing on pain is different from also focusing on joy, which can also show you like alternative ways to kind of address and kind of fix those structural gaps.
Yeah. Well, and I love that in your thesis, you were talking like it wasn't just that trans people experienced joy, but that joy became a tool almost, and that it's joy. Well, you tell me about that, so I'm not saying what it is. Yeah.
Yeah, like joy in my, like from my research, it was a central guiding tool for like trans people and I believe for all of us to navigate through our own identities, right? Like we cannot see or like feel or touch our own like identities, right? It's so vague, it's inside of us. But I believe joy is how we kind of like identify and like feel through our identities. So I think I made this kind of metaphor in my research saying that if exploring and trying out different things is kind of extending your own finger onto your like body, then joy is the texture of the identity, right? Mm-hmm. You touch something, oh, this joyous feeling, this is how I look like inside. Mm-hmm. And yeah, through that, like we find about ourselves, but also one of the things about this joy is that this is also reciprocal, right? Once you feel joy, you also want to like, you know, share that joy and extend that joy to others, because we are all like interconnected beings. We cannot exist ourselves. We always like influence one another. And this feeling of joy, when you extend it to others, it also helps others to kind of like explore themselves. And also, again, towards us, they will also extend like part of themselves towards us. And through that, oh, that person is, you know, joyful, finding happiness by doing this, and I see that, and I could like try that for myself, try to see if that brings joy to me. And now that, you know, there's another part that has been added onto my identity, right?
Yeah, I love it. I mean, I think that's, as we were chuckling about, like you and I started working on a paper together, and we were chuckling because I have been very lax finding the time to get to it. But I mean, to me, I think that is something that we, you know, like it's really bringing in sort of some different sociological ideas. I mean, no, obviously you're in sociology, but also like neuroscience and different sort of different theoretical approaches that help us to see the ways in which like the mirror self, like how others see us really can influence our sense of who we are. And that if we are experiencing only hate or negativity or any kind of environmental uncertainty, we're going to be like, we're going to maybe hide that part of ourselves. And so I think it's, you know, really speaks to people being like, oh no, there's like so many more trans people and it's because of TikTok and they're all, and it's like, no, like you dumbasses. It's that people are like allowed to experience the joy that they want to experience, like that we all want to experience. And so, and they're like, yeah, I want to keep doing this because this feels awesome. And it's like, you know, a little bit safer than it once was, although in many ways it's not. And so I think it's, I just think that it really speaks to this idea of, you know, that we all want to just feel like loved and accepted, and that we can be, you know, we can enact the parts of ourselves that feel really joyous, and we don't have to like be afraid of them, which mm-hmm. again is so beautiful and liberating. And yeah, and so, like how, like you had said earlier that you you know, that you've been thinking a lot lately about how finding meaning is a kind of form of resistance to power. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really related to what we're talking about. Like it's finding, I mean, it also feels like finding joy is a kind of resistance to power. Can you speak to that a little bit more?
Exactly. Like, I think we kind of like touched up on it briefly earlier, but it's the, idea that the society, like, in general, I guess, it's kind of, like, hard to, like, rify, like, the society in general, but yeah. There's, like, transphobia coming from, like, politicians, like, just, like, maybe from your parents, like, all these, like, forces, that idea that gender has to be this one way and only this way, and if you go out of it, then you're a sick person. That's a form of, like, exertion of one power. And, like, it is pushing people into a lot of, like, dangerous places. Like, you know, as you know, a lot of, like, trans people have, like, higher, like, suicidality compared to, like, cis people. And that's a result of that. And this kind of, like, research for trans people, coming from my own, like, experiences and my own question, of course, like, there is a, you know, aspect of expanding knowledge about trans people and gender and expanding the discipline of feminism itself, but it is also kind of, like, resisting that power, right? Finding and making rooms for trans people to thrive and become themselves and say no to that cruelty in general.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. It's so amazing. So do you find, like, it becomes clearer from what you've been saying too, like it's clear to me how that research relates to your work on multiple boards of trans resistance. But do you find that this research also relates to the work that you're doing through the Anchor program at all? Like, could you explain what the program is and sort of, like, I can see connections, but I think it's, they're maybe not as explicit. So, yeah, like, well, first tell everybody what the Anchor program is, because it is fucking amazing. Pardon my French.
Yes, of course. So basically, Anchor program stands for Alternative Neighborhood Crisis Response. It is a alternative 24-hour immediate response for mental health and substance use crisis. So if you are feeling or witnessing mental health or substance use crisis, for example, like suicidal ideation, like drug overdoses, like even just like feeling extreme, like depression, anxiety, if you feel like socially isolated, finding trouble navigating system, we can be there, like, to provide immediate and appropriate support at the spot. And also, this is a kind of continuous, like, support. So there will be, like, follow-up support to provide you continuous care, not case management exactly, but we can also refer you to social workers so that you can have, like, you know, support network around you. A lot of people who are going through, like, mental health and substance use crisis, so this will be, like, a non-police community approach on these crises. All of our workers have, like, diverse backgrounds, and also a lot of us have lived experiences with mental health issues and substance use issues as well. So it is more like empathy, conversational-based approach so that we could be there for people. And the program is, like, funded by the City of Ottawa. It's a pilot program for 3 years to see, like, how this, like, performs and, like, plans to expand it if it goes well. So currently, it is within the boundaries of, like, Centertown area, specifically from Rideau, from the east Rideau Canal, to the west Preston, to the north Ottawa River, and to the south the Queensway. So if you're in this area, call 211. If you are, again, like, feeling or witnessing mental health or substance crisis, or you can also call 911. They can direct you to 211 if they deem necessary. So yeah, there is no wrong door, and, you know, either ways, you can definitely access our program.
It's such a cool program, because I know that it's, you know, they're like that this, I think, came about as, you know, concerns that there are because there weren't, like, police aren't necessarily trained as social workers. Like, they're not trained as crisis. I mean, certain crises, but, you know, it's like firefighters do their job and police do their job. It's like, I think it's just amazing to have also, you know, crisis workers who are really specifically trained to help people who are, you know, having mental health or other kinds of crises like that. Mm-hmm. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, exactly. And I think this kind of work relates to my, like, you know, time in, like, feminist discipline and my research. Because, like, first of all, when I was in, like, you know, all of those, like, feminist seminars, we always talked about having that community care and community, like, intervention in this kind of cases instead of policing. Because a lot of, like, scholars have said that policing is a kind of like a form of state power. So, like, it is definitely not, like, it might not work in, like, marginalized people's cases. Finding and creating those, like, safe places where community members goes there, like, creating this place, this kind, safe place where one could express oneself, like, express about, like, what they're going through, their lives, without the fear of persecution, mm-hmm. Is really important, right? Because, like I said earlier, you know, while, like, joy is important, pain is also very important for us. It kind of exposes, you know, what kind of, like, gaps are in our lives, what gaps are in the system. And through that, like, having that kind of safe place to explain, express, and disclose it to the workers and the community members, we can all collaboratively work together to kind of fix, navigate through those difficult gaps, and, you know, also, most importantly, give this compassionate ear, empathetic ear to these people to, you know, at least feel better for the day. Because most of us, when we are in those kind of situations, having that ear is, you know, one of the best ways we could approach these people, right? And, yeah, lastly, also, like, I think it is also kind of like a form of research, right?
Mm.
Because, you know, of course, like, all the details, like, stays confidential, and it's not like we, like, share everything to all these different people, but we've been noticing, like, certain patterns. Oh, like, there's this big gap in our, like, you know, in our city, in Canada in generally, and also in the world. And through that, like, you know, once we kind of, like, find the consistent issues, themes, then we can kind of, like, tell, like, the city and you know, prime minister maybe, hey, like, there's this issues going on, and it's, like, proven by data here, like, all these people have been, like, telling the same thing, so maybe you could, you know, kind of try to address it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I live in the neighborhood that you serve, and it's, like, I can see that there's just a lot of suffering happening on the streets of Ottawa, and that you know, it feels very different than, you know, it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people, you know, obviously there was the pandemic, and I don't know, like, I'm very interested. I mean, there's part of me where it's like, I'm a mom and my kid goes to an elementary school, and there was, like, two people shooting up heroin right in front of the school, sitting on a bench. Like, they were trying to, like, cover themselves with, like, hoodies or something. But it was like, it's really complicated and, like, hard. It's like, but I want people to be treated like human beings, you know, like, I want people to be treated like human beings, but I also don't want people doing heroin in front of my kid's school. And so it's like, there needs to be a way that people can get help that isn't just, like, incarcerating them,
mm-hmm.
that isn't just criminalizing people, but that, you know, like, I want everybody to be safe. And
mm-hmm.
I mean, and I think I can see that too with, like, what you're talking about in your thesis with, you know, like, your goal of, like, exploring gender identity and all of, like, all of the attendant stuff is to treat people like, to see people as full, complex human beings.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Like, that, like, treating people as, like, it's the same human is super important piece, right? Ever since I started this job, I've been there for with the community members and hearing their stories and just, like, talking to them as, like, you know, as a fellow human. And one thing I, you know, saw and been witnessing is that, you know, as much as it sounds so obvious. They are just like us, you know. People out there doing substances, everything. They have their hopes, dreams, and, you know, things they want to do. Like, I kind of, like, disclose, like, too much. But, you know, it's so vibrant. It's a whole community out there. And a lot of people so far has been not focusing on the community and treating like this, you know, like disease things, right? Like it kind of goes back to, connects back to what we talked earlier. if like media and the society has been treating substance users, like homeless people, as this like pained beings, but actually there's so much joy in these communities. There's so much dreams and hopes, and they have their own, like, you know, projects they are thinking about. Like, you know, people look after each other, like they keep themselves, like, you know, keep others alive. And finding that joy kind of makes me reflect on my own bigotry in the past, and also kind of like exposes, oh, like how these people, like on the street, just random, like, you know, pedestrians, like people I see, like that kind of like normalized bigotry on these people. It's just like such a like eye-opening thing for me. So yeah, it is definitely, I guess, like, you know, research on the data part, like I said earlier, but also kind of like a opportunity for myself to kind of look back upon myself.
I love that. As someone who lives in the area, I really relate to it, that I can find my own bigotry coming out, like in my frustration or in a, like, with somebody, like, we need more housing, we need more services, but, like, stop doing drugs in front of my kid's school. But it is this, like, that's just really beautiful, what you're saying. And I think all of what you're saying in terms of emotion makes me think of the work of, like, Audre Lorde and Alison Jagger, two feminists who talk about sort of emotion as a tool, like as a way to identify, you know, Audre Lorde in particular talking about anger as a tool to identify injustice. And, you know, sometimes, not that I want to like validate the bigots, but it's like, it does make me think, like, what is the injustice that they think that they're experiencing? You know, like, what is the injustice that, like, and to me, I think often it's like entitlement. It's like this like idea. Like, I remember thinking this with like the truckers, where it was like for the not truckers in general, but like the convoy who came here. And it was, you know, people that I knew who were, you know, anti-mask or anti-vaxxers. It was like people who've lived their whole lives getting to do whatever they want and never being sort of surveilled by the state, never having the kinds of experiences that like BIPOC people or trans people or all kinds of people experience all the time. It's like suddenly they're like, how dare you suggest I have to wear a mask? I have freedom. And so, you know, I think that sometimes it's like we all experience anger as a response to injustice, but sometimes our perception of the injustice is like out of whack. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. I think, like, personally, it comes from mostly the emotion of fear, right? Mm-hmm. Like I cannot, like, you know, go into, like, every person's psychology about, like, truckers or, like, those, like, quote-unquote bigots. But what I observed is that, like, the fear that they will no longer have this meaning in their lives, right? a lot of people try to find meaning in their lives, this world, and some people might go to religion, some people might go onto like certain political ideology, conspiracy theory, or like this giant like purpose in life, like trying to save people and all that. And it's a whole struggle to kind of find meaning from this kind of like meaningless world. I don't want to say that, like, it's not that the world is hopeless, but I've been reading a lot of like Albert Camus or like all these like absurdist, like existentialist philosophies.
Okay.
And It's about like the idea of how we are thrown into this world without any meaning, and we have to kind of like try to find meaning out of like something, right? And some people might be comfortable being in this one structure, and not to like judging them, you know, finding that kind of one certain purpose in life and one like structure is definitely like comfortable. But when you think about how these different structures can also harm people, right? Like if you truly believe there is only two genders and, you know, trans people doesn't exist, then it harms trans people, it harms queer people. And being able to reflect on that and try to kind of expand and challenge that boundary, it is definitely fearful, because you feel like you're again getting thrown into this meaningless world and try to kind of like find meaning all over again. But kind of realizing that, you know, these are all just, you know, structures and meanings created by ourselves, and we can also create other meanings continuously, you know, throughout our lives, then I want to say to those people who are fearful of getting out of those boxes that it'll be okay. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not going to be lost. You are still part of this world, and while you're here, like, you know, have some fun. Mm-hmm. You know, try different things.
I love that. It also makes me, I love Kurt Vonnegut. He was like a writer, and I especially love him because I graduated from the University of Iowa, and I never had anything to do with him, but the Writer's Workshop is like one of the best writing programs in the world, probably. And Kurt Vonnegut was a professor there for a long time, but now I'm forgetting which one of his books, but I have like a mug with all these like little quotes, and my favorite one on it says, "We're all just here to fart around." So I'm like, yeah, kind of. We're just like all here to fart around. Mm-hmm. And it's like, we can have fun while we're doing that, or we can, you know, make misery for others. But mm-hmm. I think it's better to personally to have fun. I also wanted to ask you, about your photography, because I know that you are a photography enthusiast, but I also love you make beautiful photos that I see on Instagram or Facebook. And I was just wondering, do you think that's part of your, I mean, is that an art? Is that research? Is there a difference? Do you see that as part of you taking in the world? What do you like about it?
Oh, absolutely. Like, I, you know, that is funny because I also have, like, my camera over here with me right now. Like, whenever I go out there, like, you know, doing something outside my work, I like to carry around my camera. And, like, now that you mentioned it, I think it is also kind of like a form of research, right? Research onto myself and the world around me. When I, like, take my pictures, I try to find the angle and the subjects that brings me certain kind of emotions and certain kind of story to me. And it's kind of like, photography is kind of like, the meaning of the photography itself is by drawing by light. It's basically painting with this little like light molecules hitting this, you know, film surfaces. And when I take the picture, like all the lights, the subject, the angle, it kind of all tells the story. And while like some people might like walk by this just random shoe or random person or random thing, I try to find like, oh, what does this mean here? Like, you know, how can it be interpreted? And what does it tell about me thinking about that? It's kind of like, you know, all very like phenomenological again, right? Like,
How so?
Yeah. So one thing about phenomenology is intentionality, right?
Okay.
So the phenomena, the happenings, the meaning doesn't exist solely out there just by themselves. It has to come to us first to find meaning. It's all like the connection going back and forth. There's no like subject or like object dichotomy. We are all kind of like connected, finding meaning from each other. and this random shoe, just, you know, random graffiti on the wall. You know, it might be graffiti, but when I look at it phenomenologically, then I try to examine what that meaning, like what that phenomena has certain meaning to me. And by taking photograph from different angles, by looking at it in different like intentional like angle, lights, like timing, and different even like film stocks, film rolls, like black and white, color, it kind of extracts, not extracts again, explores and understands, kind of as a form of understanding my own feelings and my thoughts. So by looking at the photo, it kind of shows, you know, what I'm interested in, what I'm feeling, what I want to tell to the people. And it kind of makes me realize, oh, I am this person who likes to see these different things. Oh, these things in the world might want to tell this different kind of story. And it makes us look at the world differently. And it brings a different knowledge to this world.
I love that. Oh my God, that was beautiful. I think that's like the perfect note to end on. So I just want to, well, is there anything else that you want to make sure you get in before we end?
Well, of course, like, thanks for having me again,
Phyllis. Oh, well, thank you. This was awesome. Mm-hmm. This was so good.
Like, I had so much fun, like, talking with you, like, just reflecting on, like, my research and my work and everything. But to the audiences, I also want to say that, you know, just try to find joy in our lives, right? Try to explore different things. Like, you know, if it doesn't work out for you, that's totally fine. Like, find, like, safe spaces where you can, like, explore, try out different stuff. And I hope by doing that, I hope you find yourself growing a bit bigger the next day.
I love that. Oh my God, you were so brilliant. Thank you. Thank you for being here. This was just, oh my God, I'm so excited about this podcast, and having you as my first guest just is like, mwah, chef's kiss. So thank you. This was amazing. All right. Well, if you liked this episode, please give us a 5-star rating on your favorite podcast platform and write even just a tiny sentence fragment about of what you like about it. It'll really help us to reach more listeners and make doing social research within the reach of everyone. Bye.
Bye.